What's up and welcome to the NYC Video Podcast, a show about the film and video industry here in New York and the great people who are making it happen. I'll be your host, Tom Chavez, and each week I'll be interviewing other New York filmmakers to learn more about the craft, the process, and share their stories about their careers. Before we jump into today's episode, I wanted to share some exciting news about one of our favorite studios here in Brooklyn called Shell's Loft. Now, for years, my G&E team and I have lit countless commercials, interviews, and social media videos at Shell's old loft space in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. As of recently, though, Shell has moved her operation over to Red Hook. It's a fantastic ground floor studio with on-site parking, high ceilings, plenty of power, and the space is like flooded with natural light that can easily be blacked out. Be sure to check out some of the photos of the space on Shell's website, which is shellsloft.com. I'll drop a link in the show notes. It's a great space for shooting branded content spots, commercials, docs, and music videos. It's located a few blocks away from the Battery Tunnel, the BQE, and it's also a five-minute drive from Home Depot or Able City, which is perfect for art and camera departments. And also, there's a bunch of catering companies and restaurants within a 10-block radius, so it really helps streamline your production from start to finish. So be sure to check out her website and email Shell about rates and availability. So today's guest is John Sherburn. He's a filmmaker who just finished up school at SUNY New Paltz upstate, and he's about to make the move here to New York. I invited John onto the show because I wanted him to ask me a bunch of questions which are on his mind before making that big jump and moving downstate. Now, I'm sure hundreds of other filmmakers in and around New York or even out of the country are planning to move and start their careers here in New York, and I'm sure that they have similar questions that John has. So far, John's worked as an audio engineer, he's worked as a producer, director, and even writer for a bunch of short films and podcasts, and now he's planning to move from Rochester here to New York. On today's show, we'll talk to him about breaking into the industry, gear, and most importantly, what a filmmaker should expect when they arrive here in New York. So, without further ado, let's jump into today's episode with John Sherburn. This week's episode is sponsored by my lighting company, MasterShot Films. Since 2008, thousands of productions have entrusted the MasterShot team to deliver and operate all the lighting equipment for their interviews, branded content, and social media videos. Our gaffers and key grips deliver anywhere in the tri-state area. Visit MasterShotFilms.com to see a virtual tour of our G&E vans and to see some BTS videos of our lighting setups that we've lit over the years. Save 10% on your first booking by using the promo code NYCVideoPodcast. And now, let's get back to the show. Okay, so we've got John Sherburn here. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. So basically, today's conversation is going to revolve around some questions that you might have as a recent film school grad. I know that a bunch of film school students who are just getting out of college and who are just thinking about moving to New York may have some questions about what it's like to work in New York or just general industry questions and stuff like that. So if you have any, fire away.
Yeah, I got a couple. I tried to keep them, you know, relatively not too general, but something that a lot of people think about, stuff that has kept me up at night, stuff that I've been curious about. So I'm excited to talk to you today.
Sure.
You've lived in New York for a very long time, and I think that is really important. As someone who hasn't lived there, one of my big anxieties about moving to New York, and this, I guess, goes for LA as well, is what are the benefits to moving to one of those major hubs? And so I guess for New York specifically, what makes it worth it over a place like LA or another film hub like Toronto or Atlanta or something?
Honestly, I've actually never lived in Toronto or visited Toronto, and I visited LA a few times, but I can really only speak really for New York because I've always lived and grown up here. I'm from Jersey and I've always worked here in New York. But the great thing about living in New York is the people. It's just there's so many people and their resources. You have tons of directors, you have tons of cinematographers, you have tons of makeup artists and people that you can collaborate with. So unlike, you know, if you live what I imagine is in the middle of the country, having access to different people that have certain skills that you don't have, it's a lot harder for you to kind of collaborate on projects. So New York to me is just like the main reason that I live here, and I think that most New Yorkers live here, is your access to like really a wide array of people with different backgrounds and different skill sets that can help you out on your film shoots. You can learn from, you can work with, collaborate, and they may even change the direction of your career. You know, oftentimes people start their careers here in New York working in film production as a production assistant or a cinematographer or producer, and they just meet the right people on set, and you know, they kind of start gravitating towards another specification within the industry. So you know, like they'll go from, again, like Jax Mincone, she was on the show, she started her career as a producer, and after working and seeing so many different makeup artists kind of working on sets, she started getting curious, and then she actually ended up transitioning from being a producer to being a really successful makeup artist. So yeah, like having access to just a wide array of people is huge. You have trains, so you don't have to have a car. Having a car in New York, one, is really expensive with insurance and parking tickets and gas prices. So having access to like train stations and subways and buses to get around is just a really convenient way where you save money not having to pay all that stuff. But, you know, you also do pay a lot more in rent compared to other places in the country. So it may even itself out. But yeah, having like a 24-hour train that runs and can take you anywhere, having, you know, a ton of people to learn from, I think those are probably the main reasons that kind of keep me here in New York. In addition to like all the rental houses also that are here, we have access to well over probably 100 rental houses for cameras, for props, for weapons, if you have a movie or something that requires weapon rentals and stuff like that. So again, having a bunch of rental houses that are really close to where you live and where you work, being able to pick them up and rent them really easily makes it a lot easier to work in the film industry, I think, here in New York.
That feels like a interesting career note as well. Just there seems to be more, I guess, a wider array of jobs in New York than in a place like LA, where there's a lot of jobs, but they're very production oriented, where in New York, you can get involved in a bunch of different industries that are kind of adjacent to filmmaking, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, here in New York, it's like you have a huge narrative scene where like people are always shooting indie projects. They're shooting big budget projects. They're shooting all kinds of like documentaries and stuff like that. You have corporate videos, you have commercials, you have branded content videos. There's just so many different kinds of video productions that you can work on in here in New York. And some people who want to work and make a living at, let's say, narrative movies, it's hard to kind of just make a living just shooting features. So having access to like a lot of commercials being shot in and around your neighborhood and your city makes it really easy, because you can kind of fill the gaps between big projects, big feature films or documentaries, and you can, you know, day play on a few different short films. You can day play on some corporate videos. You can day play on commercials and just all these like little short 1 or 2 day projects. So you can kind of still earn money in between those big projects. Just that access to work on various kinds of productions is really, really helpful. And it's unique to, I think, big markets like New York, like LA, like Chicago, where, you know, there is just those really big array of different kinds of productions that are happening.
Yeah, thank you. That was really insightful. I guess leading into some other stuff is, as a young filmmaker, it feels like the possibilities are endless in terms of where I can go and what I can learn and do. And there's never enough time. So what do you think are the best skills to learn now, foundationally, be it onset skills, find like offset skills, money making skills, things that can help me to make this a career? Like, for example, being able to, you know, video edit. Like, what kind of stuff do you think is good for any filmmaker to be able to do so they can have a job, even if it's not, you know, the director job they want?
Yeah, just being open to like talk to strangers. You know, I think ever since we were kids, we're always told not to talk to strangers. But when you move to New York, like I said, like your biggest resource that you have is your ability to have all these people around you, for better or for worse. But just kind of being open-minded and talking to people, being curious and, you know, just engaging with people online and offline, and just kind of trying to talk to them and learn more about like, what do they do? What's their process like? Just that curiosity and constant curiosity of like wanting to learn what other people are doing, to me is just a really, really lifelong skill, not just for film production, but just in general. Just being very social, being very vocal. Nobody basically gets into the industry knowing everything. You kind of start out knowing very little, and you kind of, it's a slow process where you're slowly, day by day, are going to start learning different skills, different processes that take place on set, and you're just going to learn about the industry. So not being afraid to go in there green and not knowing anything, nobody's really judging you. As long as you go in there with a good attitude, wanting to help, wanting to work, just every opportunity you see where someone may need help, jump in, talk to them, be like, hey, I can totally help you carry those cases up the stairs, or no problem, I can totally sweep up that sidewalk. And this is if you're working as a production assistant, which is like a big entry point for a lot of filmmakers that start out in the industry. Just always making yourself available and making yourself helpful to whoever hires you, whether it's a producer or a department head or whoever. Just always let them know that A, you're available, and B, you're willing to do whatever they need done to make their life easier. Amber Sherman, she was on the show, she said that, you know, her main thing is customer service. Always just try to always leave people with a good impression of your services. You know, always offer help to whoever needs it on set, whether it's a higher up or someone below you. Just having that really kind of teamwork mentality is really helpful. Those are just general life skills. In terms of like professional skills, I would say, you know, if you know how to drive a truck, that's a really, really easy way for you to start finding work and just start PAing, because a lot of PAs have to drive trucks to pick up equipment from rental houses. They have to pick up expendables from expendable houses. They have to drop off actors at their hotels at the end of the night. They have to transport crew early in the morning. So just knowing how to drive and having a valid driver's license already puts you in the next tier of people here in New York, because so many New Yorkers don't have driver's licenses. So many people move to New York not knowing how to drive a car. So again, just knowing how to drive a car to me is like one of the biggest and easiest ways for you to start working and getting work. If you have some free downtime, I think I might have mentioned this in a past episode, at the New York Public Library, you have access to lynda.com, which is a whole bunch of like free software for you to be able to use and learn, you know, different kinds of software. And with a New York Public Library card, it's completely free, where normally it's like 20 or 30 bucks a month. So, you know, a lot of us who are just starting out, we have a lot of downtime. Use that downtime strategically. Try to learn, you know, Adobe Premiere or Final Cut, Lightroom, learn After Effects. If you have any kind of skills in post-production, it makes you a little bit more marketable than someone who doesn't, because so many production companies, they need people to put together like just basic rough cuts of projects. So, you know, if you meet a production company and you go work as a production assistant and you mention to them that you know some basic editing, they may want to try to hire you as a day player, just as like an editor, to put together short little sizzle reels or little, you know, commercials for rough cuts for their clients. So again, having some kind of background in post-production is also something really easy that you can, anyone can learn from home, and they can already start applying it to jobs as, you know, working for smaller production companies that are just in need of like day players. Yeah, so a lot of production assistants and people who are just starting out are always worried that their resumes are a little bit too skimpy, that they don't have enough background to apply, you know, to their resumes to kind of make it seem like they've been working for a while and get that job. You know, if you're working in G&E, which is something that I do, it's like take a day and just learn some basic knots. You can go on YouTube. If you go on the New York City Video Podcast website, there's a link to it in our resources. It just shows like a, I think it's called 3D knots or something, or I forget the name of it, but it basically teaches you how to make knots with rope. And it's, you know, a really basic life skill. But again, just knowing how to do knots, if you start working in G&E, you're going to get asked like, hey, do you know how to do, you know, a trucker's hitch, or do you know how to do a clove hitch or a square knot? Just learning these basic knots are super useful. Also, if you're working as a production assistant and you're packing trucks, if you know how to tie knots well, it'll make other people's lives much easier. And I don't know, I always appreciate a good production assistant who can tie a good knot.
Noted. Yeah. So in general for young people, but especially people trying to move to a place like New York, money is a huge fear point and something that makes it hard to even just committing to moving there. So, you know, obviously it's an industry that's not really known for wealth. And I was curious if you know anything in terms of how to go about the job search and how to go about making money enough to afford rent, especially if you can't grab a full-time job, like what to do in the, famine end of the feast and famine when it comes to working on set.
Yeah, your biggest expense off the bat is going to be rent. Just from having lived in New York for so many years, I can tell you that the majority of people that I know and work with, they live in and around Bushwick, Brooklyn, and Brooklyn in general. I feel like most of the photo and video industry come from Brooklyn or commute into the city from Brooklyn, or they work now in Brooklyn full time because there's so many studios here. But yeah, you can definitely get much better deals if you look in the outer boroughs, Brooklyn, Queens, and the Bronx. Staten Island, not so much. I mean, you could live in Staten Island, but it's kind of hard to get there by ferry boat. There's no direct train that'll take you there. But Brooklyn to me is one of the best boroughs because there's so many different filmmakers that live there. There's a lot of studios that are there. There's so many rental houses that are there now, and there's just tons of resources. And you can also get really good deals in terms of rent. Certain neighborhoods are prohibitively expensive because they're, you know, really chic, trending, and stuff like that. But no, but there are neighborhoods like Bay Ridge, Bensonhurst, which are two neighborhoods that I've lived in. They're a little bit further out, but they're easy to get in and out of the city. You can kind of get in and around Brooklyn by train to those neighborhoods. They're a lot cheaper than living in, say, like Greenpoint, Williamsburg, and Prospect Park, which are the more expensive neighborhoods. But yeah, Bay Ridge, Bensonhurst are two really great neighborhoods. Also, Sunset Park are great neighborhoods to look for apartments. They have easy access to trains, which is really key. And there are other filmmakers that live in and around that area. So it's, you know, it kind of, you're able to kind of create little communities within those neighborhoods. But yeah, in terms of, I guess, finding work right off the bat, it's tough. It's not easy for anyone unless, you know, you just come from like a wealthy family. So trying to find like little side hustles, you can obviously drive Ubers. There's like those gig jobs where there's a popular one called TaskRabbit, where like people can hire assistants to go pick something up or drop something off. You can help them out with like a handyman service, or you can pretty much do anything on TaskRabbit. So people can, you know, if they're looking for someone to come and, you know, screw in a light bulb, you can go over there. It's a quick and easy way to make 50 bucks. And you'll do, you know, several calls a day. But yeah, trying to find different gig economy kind of jobs like that are great because they're also really flexible. If you try to get a full-time job, you're obviously not going to be able to work on a movie because it's such a time commitment. So you want to try to fill your schedule with as many paying gigs as possible that are non-committal. You don't have to basically go to an office 9 to 5 Monday to Friday. You want to be able to try to find some flexible gigs. Yeah, like I know bartending used to be really big. Maybe it still is. Working as a waiter. A lot of those, you know, restaurant bar industries, they understand that a lot of their staff are actors and freelancers. So they're a lot more understanding in terms of having flexible hours. There's also, there's a great website called Upwork.com, which basically allows people to freelance from home. So, you know, production companies can hire editors, they can hire voiceover artists, they can hire graphic designers all via the web, and they assign you tasks. And then you're able to do that work from home. So again, if you have any kind of background in editing, a lot of small businesses I know right now with social media videos being so popular, they're constantly in need of editors to just edit these like 60-second videos for their social media, for their websites, for their newsletters. So again, just kind of having a little small background in editing and post-production could come in handy on your, you know, when you first move to New York, because you could do those kinds of gigs from home and also earn some decent money while keeping a flexible schedule. So if you do get a call for a feature film, or if you get a call for a commercial, you can pause whatever you're doing for, you know, a few days, a week, go do that film or TV gig, and then come back to it, pick up where you left off. But yeah, anything that pays you you know, some decent money and gives you flexibility in terms of scheduling is ideal. I'll try to do some more research and try to think of like a list of, you know, just freelance gigs that you can kind of take that are not in the film industry, but that can help you kind of fill in the gaps between jobs.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'll try to put that on my website eventually.
All right, yeah, thank you. That was really helpful, and I'll be looking forward to checking out that list. Art aside, and you know, money aside, I'm curious a little about the tech. This is obviously a tech industry, and it's always changing. It feels like every year there's new cameras, new microphones, new tripods, and it's so hard to know what to spend money on and what's important. So I'm curious if you think it's worth buying a lot of your own gear. How often should I update that gear? What are quintessential items that every filmmaker should have when they unpack their suitcase versus stuff that doesn't matter as much? And if you have any brands or anything like that you like or think it's worth investing in.
Yeah, I mean, it depends really on what's your career path? Like, what do you want to do? Do you want to get into camera? Do you want to get into sound or what?
Yeah, I mean, I guess sound is what I'd like to get into the most. Camera and sound are two, you know, AV stuff that I think everyone in some capacity wants to have a handle on and is kind of like wide range. So if you could focus on that.
Sure. I've personally never worked as a sound engineer, so I can't really name too many brands. But just from having worked on so many different shoots, I guess, you know, if you have like a basic mixer and a boom, and I'd say like 2 or 3 lavaliers, you can get pretty easy like corporate gigs, and like small commercial gigs, which again, like they're not the most fun, but they're pretty consistent. If you get in with the right production companies, you can, you know, you can record a bunch of like interviews, and branded content spots that only have 1 or 2, sometimes 3 actors. But yeah, like I know Electrosonics, I know is a big like audio brand. Rode, I think, makes some pretty affordable booms. Orca is a really popular, like cases that I see, they're really well built. I don't know how expensive this stuff is, but join some sound mixer groups that are here in New York. They can definitely fill you in on what to buy, what's going to earn you money versus, you know, if you're just starting out, maybe you shouldn't get the most expensive kit because you don't have those clients to pay you right away. Talk to professionals who are already working, who kind of know what's needed based on where you're at right now in your career, and they'll probably make much wiser suggestions than I would. But, you know, just in general, like if you want to just work on, say, corporate videos or small branded shoots, I think having, you know, a decent like starter or mid-level mixer with, I'd say, like 1 or 2 booms, boom microphones and probably like 2 or 3 lavaliers, you'll be able to find some basic work right off the bat. Try to like, you know, if you have a really small kit like that, you're probably not going to be working big feature films off like right away. So try to focus on smaller production companies. If you just Google video production companies in New York City, I guarantee you hundreds of them will pop up. And, you know, just try to prepare a really basic brief cover letter, have a website and list all the gear that you own on your website. If you have examples of your sound work listed on your website, list any relevant links of movies or projects that you've done on your website. So that way you can already start presenting what you have, what you, you know, your background, what you're training is all on your resume, and be able to kind of really efficiently send that out to production companies who are potentially in need of sound engineers. Maybe documentary films are probably a good option because they usually just do like one or two person interviews. So having like a really basic small interview kit like that would be really beneficial to a production company that's just shooting those kinds of interviews and stuff like that. Try to join those Facebook groups. I mean, they're so useful to any kind of industry that you're in. Like there are so many different professional groups that you can join on Facebook. And just people who are in those groups are just, they want to help out the community. It's amazing. Like there's a gaffer, his name's Sean Roche. He started a Facebook group called Gaffer Salon, which is basically just for gaffers and people who work in G&E. And he started this group and it was kind of a spinoff of Dave Cruda's Cinematography Salon. But anyway, so they started these professional groups and they just ask, like everyone goes on these groups now, they ask one question. And within like hours, you see like 30 or 40 replies from other like owner operators or other G&E people or other camera people that want to help out. They want to put their two cents in. They've used certain pieces of equipment that they can kind of personally say, okay, buy this. It's really good. It works really well. Or it's garbage. It's built like it's going to break on you. Don't even bother. Try investing in this brand or that brand. And they give reasons why you should buy it. They'll even post photos or samples of like what they've used before. So before you buy anything, obviously do market research on like B&H's website or Amazon, read the reviews, but also ask questions in those Facebook groups. The professionals who are in there, they want to help out the community. They're part of the community and they understand how useful of a tool it is to, you know, be able to kind of quickly and efficiently talk to other filmmakers. So before buying anything, I'd say, you know, definitely post in those filmmaker groups. But this is something I also mentioned in a past episode. Before you spend any money on these like really expensive pieces of gear, because any kind of film industry gear is super expensive. The markup is insane because there's not that many companies that make this kind of gear. Just keep in mind that it's a big investment, especially when you're just starting out. So you have to make sure that you are, one, going to promote whatever gear you have really well, because you want people to know that you own this gear, that you know how to use it, and that you can bring their production value by bringing along this equipment. But just keep in mind that like off the bat, if you're just starting out, you're not going to have, people aren't going to be knocking down your door to hire you. You're really going to have to spend a lot of time marketing yourself and trying to meet production companies and meet producers and department heads to get on set. So you have to understand that if you buy a $70,000 camera, no one's going to just call you up right away to shoot a feature film. Like you really have to promote yourself. Owning gear is definitely helpful. You know, you may get like a leg up on someone who doesn't own gear, but it's not guaranteed. And there are a lot of filmmakers who invest a ton of gear early on in their careers, and they quickly find out that they don't have clients that are, you know, knocking down their door to try to hire them, and they have to sit on these cameras or the sound equipment or editing stations that they've invested thousands and thousands of dollars, but they just don't have the work. So you have to keep that in mind. Like you're not going to get work right away just because you own something. What I always recommend is buy cheap things when you're first starting out, because one, you don't have to invest a ton of money and you'll really learn how to use it. An example, I bought a Rebel camera. It was my first starter camera, and it's a fucking amazing camera because it's, you know, it was like $500 or $600. It's Canon T2i. And it was such a basic camera. It was really cheap. And I really wanted the 5D Mark II. But the reality is, like, I didn't have clients that were going to be willing to pay me to shoot their short films with that camera yet. And that Rebel camera really kind of, I learned what exposure was. I learned how to mess with the ISO. I learned what the shutter does on a camera. I understood, you know, how to frame things. And even though it was a small kind of entry-level camera, I learned so much about filmmaking through that camera. And to this day, it's still one of my favorite cameras because, I learned so much from just using that little cheap camera. And it's also really small and it's held up. It's right here on the shelf behind me. But anyway, just try to like buy something really basic. Don't invest in like the hottest trending piece of gear that's, you know, super expensive that you see tons and tons of ads on YouTube and Facebook. Try to get like the cheaper models. Learn how to use that gear. Learn how to tell a story with a camera. Learn how to tell a story with, you know, whatever sound equipment you have, whether it's a boom or a lavalier or a mixer. Really understand like how that machine operates and if it breaks, how to troubleshoot it and stuff like that. Once you start kind of really understanding how to use this basic gear, you will get work because you know how to use it. You know its strengths, you know its weaknesses and stuff like that. So again, like try not to invest in the most expensive gear right off the bat. Start cheap and then kind of grow from there. Once you start getting bigger clients that are paying you more money, at that point, you can kind of start investing in more gear because that ball is already rolling. You can know that if you invest in a slightly more expensive piece of gear, it'll pay for itself faster. But don't feel pressured by all those commercials to buy, you know, the latest and hottest camera because, you know, it has all these bells and whistles because, again, you don't have the clients to pay for it right off the bat.
Yeah, that all makes a lot of sense. That's a good note, yeah. I think, about growing into your gear as opposed to I think a lot of young people try to make up for a lack of experience with flashy gear. And I think I know a lot of people that have great cameras and they mess up shots or they'll forget to hit record and you're like, well, you know, it doesn't matter if you have the $7,000 camera if you don't know what you're doing with it, you know?
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is about owning gear is like, a lot of people don't understand how much maintenance goes into owning gear. You know, you buy like a camera, if that camera gets dropped or scratched or, you know, gets water damage or something like that, that could be another few thousands of dollars. Sure. So you always have to basically maintaining that gear. If you're renting it out to your buddies and your friends, they're not going to treat that gear as nicely as you do because they didn't invest as much money into it. So, you know, you have to be really careful about who you rent it out to. Some people do use ShareGrid, KitSplit. There's another big one too, which I can't remember the name right now. And they're amazing services. Like you can be able to rent out the gear that you own to other filmmakers who are in need. You know, when you buy a camera, you're not using it 7 days a week. Oftentimes it's sitting on your shelf collecting dust in between gigs. So with websites like these, like ShareGrid and KitSplit, you can rent it out to a DP or you can rent out your sound mixer kit to an indie film that's shooting or a short film that's shooting on the weekend. And it's a really easy way to make money. It's like passive income. But you also have to understand that like these people are not going to treat your gear as nicely and your shit will get broken. Your cables are going to come back frayed or there might be a missing screw and you have to basically actively check out and check in all of your gear and make sure that every single last little bit made it back into the kit. Because if you buy a camera, it's not just the body. There's a bunch of different components. Or if you buy a light, there's a bunch of like different cables and scrims and all that stuff. So you have to constantly make sure that every piece of gear that goes out is coming back in. Because if you rent out a camera and they, you know, they're wrapping up in the middle of a night because they just shot an overnight, they may forget to pack in the power cable. So when you get to your next shoot and you open up your Pelican case, everything's there but the power cable and you can't power it up. And there's nothing more embarrassing than being there with all your gear and not being able to use it because you're missing one little cable or one little component. So just being really meticulous about maintaining your gear, checking it in, checking it out, making sure that everything's always working. It's a really important thing to know that. When you also, another thing, sorry for going on a tangent here, but when you buy a camera, you're not just in buying a camera, because then you have to buy a lens, and then you have to buy a media chip for it, and then you have to buy a tripod, and then you have to get an eyebrow for the lens, or, you know, if you buy a light, you have to get a C-stand, and then once you get the C-stand, you got to get a sandbag, and then you have to get an extension cable to power the light. So it's never just like one thing. People see like, oh, I'm going to get this camera because it's only $18,000, but then you realize that like with all the accessories, you're going to spend probably closer to $40,000 or $50,000. Which is, you know, again, a huge, huge, huge upfront expense if you're just starting out. So again, start small and then grow into that stuff. Don't just blow your load on this huge camera package or huge lighting kit or whatever, expecting yourself to get work. Just kind of really start slow, start small, and then meet other filmmakers, start collaborating with them. And you know, if you build a good reputation of having a little bit of gear, but you're a great guy to work with, other sound engineers will start recommending their clients to you when they can't take the work. And that's just a great way to start your career, is getting referrals. So, yeah.
Sure. So, big question I have that is like the eternal conversation. School versus no school. And it's tough. Is it worth going to film school? Is it worth getting an unrelated degree? Is there a middle ground? Is it better to not go? Associates versus, you know, bachelors. What are your opinions on college and university for filmmakers?
I'm a little bit biased. I went to Brooklyn College, which is part of the CUNY system. And it's, it was, when I went back then, and I'm sure today it's still, it was a really amazing deal. It was dirt cheap. The teachers were great. The campus was beautiful. It still is. Actually, I just drove by the campus last night. It's a gorgeous campus and the teachers are professionals. A lot of them are still working in the industry. So you get a lot for what you pay, and you know, not to knock on NYU or Columbia or any of those schools, I'm sure they're excellent institutions, but I paid, I think it was like $2,500 a semester, I think. And they paid, I don't know, like $60,000 a year or whatever it was. To this day, I still work every single day side by side with NYU filmmakers and Columbia filmmakers. So if you don't, you know, if you come from modest background, there's nothing wrong with the CUNY schools. They're excellent resources. You get to do the exact same kind of exercises. You learn the foundations, and the foundations are the same whether you go to NYU, Columbia, or whatever. It's a really good place to start. The great thing about going to film school is you get to learn about the history of film. You get to work with like a lot of stuff that you probably normally wouldn't have access to. When I was in Brooklyn College, we shot on 16 millimeter, we shot on 8 millimeter, which again, I'm not a DP, but I'm glad that I was able to learn in the analog age. And, you know, now we're in the digital age, but I still understand the principles of, you know, ISO and you know, just understanding how to basically build a film camera and how to load film. That was really cool. I was just kind of a geek back then, but, and I still am. You know, it's tough. I'm a firm believer that you don't have to go to film school. You can learn all of this stuff these days on YouTube. And if you're hungry and you have the curiosity and attitude, you can talk your way onto a set and you can start working and you can start learning the craft. If you're a curious person, you can start reading books on film history and you can learn basically, I think most, if not all, of the stuff that you learned in film school working in the real world. But it's really up to you to be curious and want to be on set, be talkative and be able to sell yourself. When you go to film school, what's cool about it is you have a guided education. You have teachers that have gone through all this stuff and who can offer you personal advice. They can give you job referrals. They can you can basically, once you graduate and if you're, you know, friends with your professors, they can make recommendations and kind of help you professionally and you know, introduce you to people that can get you work. But I've never, in all the years that I've worked, I've never been asked for my diploma. I've been asked for my reel, and I think, you know, that's a valid ask from anyone that's going to hire you. It's like, doesn't matter where you went to school, but what can you do, you know? And if you have content that you can show them of what you can do, that speaks far more than, you know, a black and white resume listing a college in Missouri or, you know, New York or whatever. So I'm kind of in our industry, I don't think it's that specialized. I think, you know, if you're curious, especially living in New York too, New York can be your college. You know, if you want to get into if you want to become a jib operator, you just Google, hey, jib operators in New York, and go apprentice for them. You know, you're going to learn Scotty Buckler. He's like this wizard of jibs here in New York. He builds his own jibs. He's been doing so for years. He programs them with, you know, with computer software and stuff like that. The guy can build jibs from the ground up. If you want to learn how to be a jib operator, look him up. Go talk to him. I'm sure he can teach you a ton of stuff, and then you can go off and become a jib operator on your own. So yeah, living in New York, you have access to so many people that are quote-unquote professors. It's just that you're going to get paid to learn on set. Film school is great. I have a lot of wonderful memories. You know, you get to shoot projects, collaborate with people that are just as inexperienced as you are, and then learn from the ground up that way. I feel like if I could do it all over, I don't know. I'm not sure if I would have invested four years. But I do have like great memories from, you know, staying up late and editing projects that we shot on film. So it's each person's different. I don't know. I'm glad I did go to film school, but looking back, I don't know if it's necessary for you to start working. It's good for you to learn the history. It's good for you to learn basic foundations and principles. But if you're like a curious person, I feel like you could learn that on your own. If you, you know, talk to professionals, read some books, you have YouTube nowadays where you can learn so much. It's really up to whoever wants to, whoever is interested.
Yeah, no, it's one of those questions without an answer. It's different for every individual person, but I'm glad that you, as someone who went to school, can opt for both. I think that's helpful because I think a lot of times people are in the camps based on what they did themselves.
Yeah. I mean, the great thing about college and for like film school or whatever, more so college, is like you get to learn about so many other things. It really kind of opens up the world to you. Like when you go to college, you learn about, you know, art history, you learn about geology, you learn about political science and all this kinds of stuff that you probably normally wouldn't be exposed to. And it really might change the course of your career. You know, I went into college wanting to be an actor, and I ended up being a filmmaker. You know, some people go to film school, but they end up being doctors because they take the right class, the right teacher, and it kind of just spins their professional compass around and they go off in a different direction. So
that's what happened to me, not to change. I was going to be a teacher for 8 years. I wanted to be an English teacher at a high school level. And I went to school and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do at that point. So I was going for English and economics. And then my one friend came home and said, I just declared to be a digital media production major. And I was like, I like making stuff. So I changed over. Ironically, she's now sociology. She just graduated sociology 6 months ago. So it's just kind of funny how that kind of stuff changes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot to be said about having the right teachers. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have the right teacher who really kind of takes the time, listens to you and offers like constructive criticism, then they don't just like make you feel like an idiot. They inspire you. They kind of get you excited about, you know, otherwise mundane things. Like having the right teachers, it's an amazing thing for a student to sit in a class and just be floored by, you know, a concept or whatever that a teacher talks about. So yeah, going to college, it's It's a great investment just in terms of like, I feel like at 18 years old, you don't have any idea of what the world has to offer you.
Sure.
You know, because your circle is so small. You're basically, you know, you probably grew up in the same place and you don't really understand about the world and how the world works and how the, you know, even how the city works. So just having like a teacher that kind of open a window for you and just show you all the different paths in the world is a great thing. So
in closing, I want to ask about what you see on the horizon of the filmmaking industry. Obviously, things are changing a lot from tech to culture, and the way films get made seems to change with every major, you know, film that comes out that changes the game up. And so I'm curious what you think young filmmakers should be familiarizing themselves with now in preparation for the way things are going to work in 10 years or 15 years. What, you know, the same as in the 90s, getting computer skills was an invaluable thing. If you decided to invest in learning how to code or something, you could be a millionaire today. And so what would you say that young people should be focused on for the future of film?
Yeah, I mean, I was actually having a conversation with a friend of mine the other day, and, you know, with this whole work from home kind of mentality that everyone's been experiencing for the past year, people are just hiring and working with other people via computers. And with like the proliferation of like 5G and like ultra high fast speed internets, I'm really worried about people that work strictly in post-production, because once you have digital media, for you to hire, say, an editor or a photo editor or a video editor here in New York or in the States, it's very expensive, because if you're good at what you do and it's something very niche, traditionally it's commanded a very, very high price tag for you to hire someone like that. But with, you know, websites like I mentioned earlier, like Upwork and Fiverr, you can connect with other filmmakers in other countries and other editors in other countries who charge a lot less. You can hire an editor in India or Pakistan or the Philippines for, you know, pennies on the dollar of what you would pay someone here in the States. And I'm just worried that, like, with internet speeds being so fast and people being able to either, you know, transfer data from their hard drives to a cloud and have someone else around the world download it and be able to edit the footage for so much cheaper, I really think that the post-production world is going to change a lot over the next 5 to 10 years. Because again, I think a lot of producers, their main job is to shoot content and edit it and deliver it for as little money as possible, so that way they can make as much money as possible for themselves. If you can offshore a lot of that work digitally, I think that's going to eventually happen and become like a mainstream thing. So for people that are in post-production, you know, I would tell them to just try to learn hard skills as well, like hands-on skills that are not just in front of a computer, because I feel like a lot of these jobs that are strictly digital and just require computer work, they will eventually get offshore to other countries. So being able to, you know, operate a camera or, you know, set up light or, you know, do hair and makeup, those are skills that you need humans that are in a specific place and time to do. So being able to balance your career, I mean, you don't have to obviously specialize in both, but just having a general understanding, because I feel like, again, from this whole mentality of work from home, people are going to be a lot more comfortable hiring people, you know, around the world or in other states and other countries to do a lot of those digital tasks. So trying to diversify all of your skills, so that way, if it does happen and when it does happen, you're kind of prepared to leapfrog into something else. I think, like, just the past year, so many people have realized that, like, their jobs are non-essential. Like, you know, if shit hits the fan, you're not going to work for a month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. So having backup skills to fall on. My good buddy Dave Williamson, he's an amazing gaffer here in New York. And you know, when everything happened, he became a carpenter, and he had a background in carpentry. He knew how to work with his hands, and he was able to make a living working as a carpenter right away, which is something great to fall back on. I unfortunately don't have any other skills but lighting. And when this whole thing happened, I realized like how I have to start learning other skills to make myself more marketable. So if the film industry does stop, I have something else to fall back on. So, you know, right now I'm in the process of learning how to podcast. I think it's a great medium. I think it's a great tool. It's a great way to communicate and market yourself. So that's, you know, my skill that I'm trying to learn right now. And God forbid, if the film industry stops, at least I might have some kind of life vessel where I can kind of still make a living. So yeah, trying to diversify your professional skills, so when things happen, you have a way out.
Well, you've provided me with a good dose of fear to end the show here today.
It's not all gloom. It's not all gloom. No. Filmmaking's great, especially in New York. You're going to meet a lot of great people. You're going to see a lot of incredible things, some unbelievable things. You're going to make really tight relationships. It's a great city. You know, there's so many, like I said, there's so many resources. There's so many good people that are in this city that you can learn from, you can bullshit with, you can learn from, and just, yeah, all kinds of stuff. So It's a hard city. It's not an easy city to live in. It's not a cheap city to live in, but you will get a lot out. As long as you like to deal with people, I really don't think there's any other place like it. There's... Yeah, it's just a great scene to live and work in film production.
Thank you for answering my questions. It's been really helpful. You've said a lot of good things that I will write down and reflect on. So thank you for talking to me for the last 45 minutes about it.
Sure. Well, cool, man. Well, yeah. Well, thanks so much for being on the show, for asking these questions. Feel free to, if you have any questions, put them on Facebook. Either go on those Facebook groups. If you go on the NYC Video Podcast Facebook group, I'm trying to grow that community for other filmmakers who are local. So if you do have basic questions about like moving to New York or, working in the industry, try to use that as a resource to, ask me or other people questions about how to make it here in the city and hopefully one of us can answer.
Yeah, I'll definitely check that out.
Cool. All right, man. Well, thanks so much for being on the show. Yeah, we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Have a nice night.
All right, man. Cheers.
Finding qualified crew members for a film and TV production is a daunting and time-consuming task. The Available app makes it easy to streamline the booking process and gives you full control of hiring and management by utilizing your network to find and communicate with your crew. It allows you to quickly see who's available to work on set immediately. Download the Available app today on the Apple and Google Play stores.
Okay, that just about wraps up today's interview with John Sherburne. Like so many other recent film school graduates, he's at a point in his career where he has to choose which coast to move to in order to start his professional journey as a filmmaker. Now, New York is unarguably the Northeast's capital of filmmaking and video production. There are tons of opportunities to be had, there are friendships to be forged, and productions to be shot. Whether you're interested in grinding it out on indie features, exploring interesting and relevant world events in documentaries, or jumping on board a new Netflix series, New York has something for everyone in production. Be sure to listen to future episodes where we'll be interviewing other working professionals here in New York that are working in the field, and they can talk about their experiences and their careers. If you have any questions or a theme you'd like us to explore, shoot us a DM on Instagram at NYC Video Podcast. Thanks again for listening. And if you'd like to show us some love, consider dropping a few bucks in our virtual tip jar to keep the show going. You'll find a link in the show notes. Until next week, I'm Tom Chavez, and you've been listening to the NYC Video Podcast. I'll see you on set.